We will not obey unjust laws or submit to unjust practices. We will do this peacefully and openly because our aim is to persuade. We adopt the means of nonviolence because our end is a community at peace with itself.
The movement met with white resistance, with billy clubs, with bombs. But it did change America. It brought about federal laws which toppled Jim Crow and barriers to black voting. Today, there are 23 black members of Congress, and black voters are an acknowledged force in national politics. In the 50s, half of all black Americans lived in poverty. By the 70s, that number had been cut to a third. But today, the mass movement has lost much of its energy and direction. The dramatic gains of the 50s and 60s have given way to more limited actions against more intractable problems. In 1967, 1 year before his death, King predicted the final push for racial equality would be the most difficult.
It didn't cost the nation anything to integrate lunch counters. It didn't cost the nation anything to integrate hotels and motels. It didn't cost the nation a penny to guarantee the right to vote. Now we are in a period where it will cost the nation billions of dollars to get rid of poverty, to get rid of slums, to make quality-integrated education a reality.
And in this era of federal budget cuts, many blacks believe the nation has turned its back on black concerns and fear they are losing ground. Certainly, recent racial flare-ups remind us that King's dream of a multiracial society at peace with itself remains elusive. We'll discuss Martin Luther King Jr. and the current state of black America when Newsmark, The Dream and the Reality, continues in a minute.
Welcome to beautiful New Peking, home of the Kublai Khan. On your right, you'll see the Emperor's gold-plated palace. And on your left, a man inventing the calendar.
China's first big city was a very busy place, but hard to get to. Visitors had to go over the Great Wall, then sail down the Yellow River. And waiting for them was a new invention called paper money, made from the bark of the mulberry tree. You can see the sights throughout Asia and the Far East a lot easier today, thanks to United Airlines and the American Express Card, the ideal traveling partners. United now offers friendly service to 13 major cities across the Pacific, including Beijing. And the American Express Card has helpful travel service offices throughout the Far East and South Pacific to take care of your travel needs. So the next time you have business in the land of Kublai Khan, buy your United tickets with the American Express Card. And leave your mulberry bark at home.
I'm Bill Whitaker, CBS News. Joining me now here in Atlanta are Representative John Lewis, the newly elected congressman from this city and a veteran of the civil rights movement, and David Garrow, the author of Bearing the Cross, a new book about Dr. Martin Luther King. And with us in Washington is the Reverend Dr. Joseph Lowry, president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the organization that Dr. King once headed. There have been racial incidents in recent months in Howard Beach, New York, in Philadelphia, at the Citadel in South Carolina, and elsewhere. And the new governor of Arizona thinks Martin Luther King's birthday should not be a state holiday. Are these signs of a resurgence of racism in the country? Dr. Lowry.
Well, perhaps that's difficult to take two or three incidents and blanket the entire nation. I do think, however, that there is a climate in this country now which is more conducive, which is more tolerant of anti-black and anti-poor and anti-brown and anti-red sentiments and statements and indeed deeds. I think that climate has been exacerbated over the past 4 or 5 years by a leadership in this country that has displayed a rather insensitive, uncaring attitude toward the problems of the poor, particularly if they happen to be black. And I think in that kind of militaristic, insensitive climate, you'll find people who will take more liberties in expressing their feelings and their prejudices and their bias than they would when the leadership of the nation had created a climate that continued to frown on prejudice and bias and that kind of attitude.
Mr. Garrow, we're coming up now on the second Martin Luther King holiday, and still many Americans balk at the day. As we mentioned, the governor of Arizona does plan to repeal the holiday in Arizona. Why do you believe there's still such resistance to Dr. King and his message?
I don't think that there's that much resistance either to Dr. King, his message, or to the holiday. I think that this one individual objection to the holiday in Arizona, as I understand it, is not something where this governor is opposed to Dr. King or his message. And I think, in fact, that the vast majority of Americans have not only accepted, but have accepted quite eagerly and welcomed the King holiday, not only as a celebration of Dr. King and his life, but as a very important recognition of what the civil rights movement did for all Americans.
Well, Mr. Lewis, we have seen an increase in racial incidents. The Justice Department reports that racial incidents have been rising over the past few years. Is this evidence that America has forgotten the message of Dr. King or has turned its back on that message?
I think this is evidence that we're still two societies, one white and one black. The scars of and stain of racism are still with us. But I don't think that Americans as a whole have turned their back on the dream and the hopes of Martin Luther King Jr.
Well, what would account for some of the incidents that we are seeing and for the rising numbers that the Justice Department reports?
I think we still have problems. We still have a great distance to go in America before we create that sense of the beloved community that Martin Luther King Jr. Preached for so many years.
Well, the civil rights movement has undoubtedly improved the lives of many blacks, but there seems to be an underclass that has been left behind, locked in poverty. Dr. Lowry, I'd like to ask you, what is the future for this black underclass?
Well, right now it's a dim future because there is no real sensitivity to what's happening. I have a speech I'd like to make for CBS sometime called Everything Has Changed and Nothing Has Changed. And I think we are living in that kind of paradoxical situation. We have more blacks enjoying middle-level incomes than ever before, while at the same time, we have more blacks in poverty. One out of three black families is in poverty today, and this expanding underclass indicates social chaos for the future. We're sowing the wind of insensitivity, and we're going to reap the whirlwind of social chaos. What happens when people have no hope? They grow desperate. They don't care about the norm in society. Their behavior becomes erratic. And I think that it behooves this nation in 1987 to initiate the kind of programs, the kind of job training opportunities, the kind of educational opportunities that give these young people, particularly young people, hope for the future so that they can join the American dream and not be shut out. We put poverty on the back burner. Somebody's turned off the fire. The poor have become invisible, and soon they become expendable. I think this nation's got to set its priorities in order, and the first item of agenda, along with the issue of world peace, has to be addressing the issue of the poor, the underclass. And they're not all homeless. Homelessness reflects the extreme. But most poor people in this country are working. They simply don't earn enough to get out of poverty. And that expanding underclass that have lost hope, that's a real tinderbox that we've got to deal with very soon.
What is the state of black America today? How near or far are we from Martin Luther King's dream for American society? Our Newsmark broadcast, The Dream and the Reality, will continue in just a minute.
Meredith Wilson's ever-popular music man, the Tony Award winner, is being presented by the Fullerton Civic Light Opera, February 13th through March 1st at Plummer Auditorium, Chapman and Lemon Streets in Fullerton. The Music Man is a classic piece of Americana performed by a cast of 45 with full orchestra. Would you and your date like to be the guest of KNX on March 1st for a Sunday matinee? Following the Music Man, you'll dine at Tony Florentine's Melody Inn, one of Orange County's most stylish and intimate restaurants, offering the finest in continental cuisine. The Melody Inn is located at 110 South Harbor Boulevard in Fullerton. To become eligible for our drawing, just print your name, address, and telephone number on a standard-sized postcard. Mail your card to KNX Music Man Contest, 6121 Sunset Boulevard, Hollywood, California, 90028. Cards must be received by 6 p.m. of February 27th. That's when we'll call our winners. Alternate cards drawn if no one answers.
I'm Bill Whitaker, CBS News, continuing with Congressman John Lewis. Southern Christian Leadership Conference President Dr. Joseph Lowry, and with author David Garrow. Blacks have made tremendous strides in the last three decades. Congressman Lewis, your own election illustrates one of the areas of advancement, black participation in electoral politics. How have you seen things change?
During the past few years, I think we have witnessed what I like to call a nonviolent revolution here in the southern parts of the United States of America, but all across the country. We have made progress. Just a few years ago, it would have been impossible to dream that John Lewis would be in the Congress of the United States. For John Lewis would have been denied the right to register to vote, the right to participate in the democratic process. So we have witnessed the registration of hundreds and thousands, literally millions of black voters in the 11 southern states of the old Confederacy, from Virginia to Texas. We have seen young black men and women elected to responsible positions at the local level. The signs are gone. Those signs that said white and colored, they're gone, and they will not return. I think there's a greater sense of hope, a greater sense of optimism on the part of a large number of black people today than ever before.
There are exceptions, but for the most part, blacks are elected from predominantly black districts. They seem to have a hard time attracting white votes, especially for statewide offices. I believe only six blacks won statewide offices in 1986. Is this a pattern you expect to continue?
I don't think that pattern will continue. I think black elected officials, black candidates must reach out and to build that sense of coalition, reach out to white voters, and move southern politics and move American politics beyond that element of race.
John, if I may...
Yes, Dr. Lowry.
Yeah, I agree with John that black politicians must reach out, but I think the burden of reaching out rests with the majority. Historically, blacks have been willing to vote for white candidates, but the reciprocity has not come. And there are very few instances in this country where, no matter how qualified the black candidate, that he can get an adequate number of white voters. Tom Bradley in California is an example. The fact that you mentioned that there are only six statewide offices, and a matter of fact, out of the 6,000 or more black elected officials, most of those officials, unfortunately, occupy relatively powerless positions. Although we have 300 black mayors and other and a large number in Congress, we don't have a we don't have a senator in Congress. We don't have a governor. We have one lieutenant governor, I believe, and that's in the state of Virginia. Much to that credit, but the truth of the matter is that the white voters have yet to demonstrate that they're willing to reciprocate. Even in the Democratic Party, where the most loyal, consistent support has come from the black electorate, we're going to have to see a lot more initiative and aggressiveness on the part of leaders in white communities to reach out and vote for qualified black candidates.
Do today's young people, both black and white, have any idea what the civil rights struggle of the 50s and 60s really involved? Do Americans need to be reminded? Mr. Garrow?
I teach at a college in New York City, and my sense is that many of our young people in the 18 to 25-year-old age bracket really have very little familiarity or knowledge about the achievements of the movement and have only a very distant, very general sense of what Dr. King's life was about and what so many thousands of people gave to the black freedom struggle in the 1950s and 60s.
What does that mean? Where does that leave us if people have forgotten what it took to get us to this point? Congressman Lewis?
I think it's sad, really, and somewhat tragic, because what we're talking about here is contemporary American history that people tend to forget, people tend not to know recent history. And it's important, I think, for young people, blacks and whites, to know the struggle, to know the distance we've come in order to be prepared to travel the distance we must go, really.
Reverend Lowry, do you agree? Is America forgetting what it took in the civil rights movement to get us to this point today?
Well, I think there's a very intentional effort to wipe out the past, because we don't want to be reminded of our history, but we can't do it, and we've got to remember where we've come from and where we are in order to understand where we have to go. We have made progress. As I said earlier, everything has changed, but there's another sense in which nothing has changed. For example, in 1957, when SCLC was organized by Dr. King and others of us in the South, the median income of black people in this country was 57-58% of the median income of whites. Today, 30 years later, we're celebrating our 30th anniversary. That median income is still 57-58% of the median income of white people. I'm saying that not only do we not remember, we don't want to remember, but we've got to tackle that. We've got to tackle that problem. It's going to be disastrous for us if we don't find ways to include those who've been excluded in the mainstream of our, particularly our economic lives. We have not, for example, examined the issue of full employment. And we need to commit this nation to full employment. And we need to reorder our priorities in terms of the national budget and that sort of thing in order to face that issue. If we don't do that, we're not really serious. And one of the things that frightens me about celebrating Dr. King's birthday is that we tend to direct our interests and our reverence toward the personality rather than the principles. I think it's disservice to say I embrace Martin Luther King and then not work for peace. It's rather sacrilegious to me to say I will honor Martin Luther King and then not work for human rights. I think we've got to stop being so ceremonial in the observance and be more sacramental. Ceremonies end with the benediction. Sacraments begin with the benediction, and we need to begin now to tackle the problems of full employment, the problems of peace, the militarism. And I think militarism is the hammer which drives a nail of racism into the body politic, and it's the greatest threat to human rights in the history of this country. We've got to deal with that if we really want to honor Martin Luther King.
Dr. Lowry will discuss full employment and affirmative action when Newsmark continues after this.
Just got myself a great new job. Know where I found it? In the National Business Employment Weekly. Every issue tells you about the best professional, managerial, and technical jobs available all across the country. Salaries from $25,000 a year to $250,000, and articles to help you land the job that's right for you. Writing better resumes, coming across strong in interviews, marketing yourself, and articles that help you manage your career, like setting career goals, salary statistics, how to ask for a raise and get it. The National Business Employment Weekly, published by the Wall Street Journal, helps you get a great job, helps you manage your career. Ask for the National Business Employment Weekly at your newsstand. Or if you prefer, you can have the next 8 issues sent to you by first-class mail for $35. Call toll-free in the continental U.S., 800-228-5500. That's 800-228-5500. Except in Nebraska. Major credit cards accepted. The National Business Employment Weekly. Don't make a career move without it.
I'm Bill Whitaker, CBS News, continuing with Congressman John Lewis, Southern Christian Leadership Conference President Dr. Joseph Lowry, and with author David Garrow. Well, let us discuss affirmative action. There are whites who feel that it's gone too far, that it's become a system of discrimination in its own right. Dr. Lowry, has it?
Well, I think that's a cop-out. I think that the assault on affirmative action reflects a kind of reversal of the national commitment to close the gap. I think affirmative action is American. I think it's a part of the American dream, part of the American ethos. How else do you close a gap except through intentionality? The gap didn't come into being by osmosis, capillary action, accidentally. It came into being because there was a deliberate attempt to exclude blacks and other minorities from the mainstream. Now, if we're going to close that gap, we have to be intentional. And I think that the assault on affirmative action is really an assault on the American dream.
Well, there have been repeated charges made by many in the black community that the Reagan administration is antagonistic towards blacks. The Reagan administration says it's colorblind. Mr. Lewis, have Reagan's policies hurt the black community?
I think the policies of this administration and the policy of Mr. Reagan has been very damaging to the black community. This president and his administration have been insensitive and out of tune and out of step with the concerns and with the needs, not only of the black community, but of poor people, the elderly, and of children.
But his policies, until this Iran-Contra affair, have been approved by most Americans, and I believe one poll I saw just before the election showed that his approval rating was rising even among blacks. Dr. Lowry?
Well, you know, personal approval is one thing, and approval of policies is another. I think you see the same kind of ironic thing with Mr. Reagan, as I mentioned about the holiday. Many people disagree with Mr. Reagan's policies, but continue to affirm him as a kind old gentleman who is rather indestructible, as we know. He's probably the nearest thing to Superman we've had on the American scene. Bullets bounce off of him. He spits out cancer. He just had surgery that would have kept most of us in bed for 2 or 3 weeks. And here he's bounced back. He's an indestructible man. So you and I admire him personally. But in terms of his policies, I think he's been disastrous. I think he has not only run up the deficit, but he has he's created a climate of invidious individualism to go along with the insidious insensitivity. And a marriage of those two things has produced products of assaults on affirmative action, the emasculation of programs designed to deal with the elderly and the young in order to send arms to Iran and Iraq. We have the most confused foreign policy, and it's reflected in our domestic policy. We are exporting war and terror while denouncing it, and we're spreading poverty all over the world. I think his policies are disastrous, and he's injected a kind of venom into the American bloodstream that makes us say we don't care about the poor. We're going to take care of ourselves, and that's why you see the hostility. People who say we lost Vietnam, we've gotten caught in Nicaragua, but we're going to win the Battle of Howard Beach. That macho, militaristic kind of attitude is a direct result of Mr. Reagan's policies, and I think the American people are going to reject them.
Well, I would like to ask you all, with the Martin Luther King holiday approaching, where would America be today had Martin Luther King not lived? Mr. Garrow?
I don't think America would be in a fundamentally different place if Dr. King had lived past 1968. But I think it's important to stress that Dr. King, in my judgment, would be very disappointed were he able today to look back at what's happened and what hasn't happened over these past 18 years. And I think it's crucial for all Americans in regard to the King holiday to not simply think of celebrating Dr. King's achievements of 20, 25 years ago, but to rededicate themselves to the goals of eliminating discrimination, eliminating poverty, and combating both militarism and materialism that Dr. King dedicated his life to in the 1960s.
Congressman Lewis.
If Martin Luther King Jr. hadn't lived, I think the American society will be very much like South Africa is today. We will be a much more divided nation. We'll be like Northern Ireland, or Lebanon. Martin Luther King Jr., in his own way, in his own time, freed all of us, blacks and whites alike, and made of all of us a better people.
Dr. Lowry?
Bill, what was your question? What we would be like if Martin had not lived?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Without Martin Luther King's influence?
Well, that's a very difficult question. You know, I believe that God moves in history, and the moral imperatives of the faith are going to be exploded into reality and into human relationships. And I think Martin made a tremendous contribution. God used him. But if Martin had not come along, I think God would have found another way. And God would have found other means, and God would have found other persons to deliver his people. He always has a purpose and a plan, and I think his fidelity in history on the side of those who are oppressed is unquestioned. I think the other thing I want to say is that one of the mistakes we've made, I think, is we've allowed poverty to be painted black. Poverty is not black. Most poor people in this country are not black. There are 35 to 45 million poor people in this country. Most of them are white. Now, blacks are disproportionately poor, and we are prepared to, we're so democratic, we're prepared to share the bottom of the economic ladder with other groups. But I think we've got to approach the issue of full employment and eliminating poverty from a much broader perspective than that of race. It's a philosophy, it's an economic system issue, it's a humane and human issue, and we've got to approach it with a transcendent perspective other than race.
Well, gentlemen, thank you. I've been speaking with Dr. Joseph Lowery, head of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, with Georgia Congressman John Lewis, and with author David Garrow. I'm Bill Whitaker, CBS News, Atlanta. A word about next week's Newsmark after this.
When innocent children are abducted, we all need to get involved. This is Attorney General John Van de Kamp with important news about how you can help locate missing kids. My office has begun monthly distribution of missing children posters. They'll be displayed in state and school buildings throughout California. We're offering a reward of up to $500 for information leading to the recovery of the kids pictured on these posters. Additionally, a toll-free hotline has been created. The number is 800-222-FIND. You'll see the posters in thousands of locations. Watch for them and take a close look at the faces of these missing kids. And if you've seen one of them, call 800-222-FIND. Please, remember this number, 800-222-FIND. Help find our missing children.
Next week on Newsmark, Super Bowl weekend, we'll take a look at the future of professional football. I'm Rob Armstrong, CBS News. Join me for the NFL when the cheering stops.
This week's Newsmark was produced by Rob Foreman with Jill Landis and senior producer Norman Morris. Assistant to the producers, Evelyn Lee. Technical supervision by Reggie Huff, John Smith, and Rob Rainey in Atlanta, and Glenn Bowman in Washington. The executive producers of Newsmark are Joseph Dembo and Dick Reeves. I'm Bill Whitaker, CBS News.